Join culture creator Ramel Wallace, museum CEO Micah Parzon, philanthropist Erwin Jacobs, and urban agriculturist Diane Moss on Season 2 of Stop and Talk, a podcast about the future of the San Diego region. How can we create a vibrant region that celebrates our cultural richness and economic strength? Find out and hear other San Diego experts on Stop and Talk. Discover seasons 1 and 2 now at stopandtalkpodcast.com. That's stopandtalkpodcast.com. Are you passionate about resolving conflicts and making positive impact in the world? Then USD's Conflict Management and Resolution Master's Program may be for you. Learn to address conflicts at all levels, from personal disputes to global crises. Join the Kroc School's dedicated community fostering peace and understanding while you acquire practical skills to navigate diverse settings. Apply now and be the change you want to see in the world. Visit sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD. That's sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD.
So there's a softball cheer where they say somebody steals a base.
I was like, where are you going with this?
Is this still
like,
part of the lead-in?
They're like, the cops are coming. The cops are coming. You stole a base. You stole a base.
That's nice. Cute.
So I can.
I thought it was working.
3, 2. Welcome to the Voice of San Diego podcast in partnership with News Radio 600 KOGO. I'm Scott Lewis, the CEO and editor-in-chief at Voice of San Diego. And I'm joined, as always, by the managing editor, Andrea Lopez Villafana. What's up, Lopez?
Hey, Lewis.
Also in the studio this week, senior investigative reporter Will Hunsberry. What's up, my man?
Yo, what's up?
Let's go.
I feel like I got called up from the minor leagues or something. This
no,
is great.
This is, you know, don't mess up.
Exactly. I know. I could get sent back quickly.
Coming up on the show this week, the cops are running. The cops are running. At least 3 City of San Diego police officers are running for elected office. As you journalists know, that gives us official license to call it a trend. We'll explain the trend and go through what's happening. Also, we have updates on a couple stories we've been following. 1, will the city of San Diego eliminate the city attorney as its own elected office? The mayor has finally weighed in. And also, tensions at the Barrio Logan Community Planning Group continue. Several board members have now resigned. We'll explain why. Finally, one bit of news broke at PolitiFest and other news outlets have followed it. Coronado is on the verge of a deal with the state. The little city on the island that's not really an island has refused to comply with state law on housing plans. But now the city wants to make a deal. We'll talk about that and more. It's going to be a good show. Stay with us. So you guys remember a couple weeks ago when we did a show about the city attorney at the city of San Diego and how she didn't have nice things to say about the plan that would eliminate her role, right?
Yes. Not a fan. Yeah, I remember.
Didn't like it much. She had some very critical things. Remember, she said it would eliminate a branch of city government?
Yes.
And it would cost all this money. It would eliminate all these transparency things.
Totally. They don't want her to exist.
Right. She later, of course, had this incredible encounter with the city council, where the city council's rules committee was presenting, you know, or was going to have a conversation about this issue. And they said, we can't handle this because we think this is weird that we have to make this decision and you've provided us advice on this, even though you're clearly against it.
Yeah.
Right. Well, she provided a memo and then she had provided a legal analysis.
Right.
And her legal analysis, she said, was like straightforward.
Right.
And
her
was
legal,
a legal
analysis of should she exist or not.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
But yeah, then her biased memo was like, no.
Her memo was very critical. Now, she, at that hearing, when Council President Sean Elo Rivera said, hey, you're giving us, it's hard to take your advice when you're clearly against this thing. Mm-hmm. She said, I'm not. I haven't taken a stand on it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, Mara.
Yeah. And I was like, that's an interesting thing for her to say. Uh-huh. So I called her office. I had a good conversation with her. She said, look, I believe that there's a lot of problems with this, and I think it's my job to make them deal with the problems that I've identified, but it doesn't mean I've taken a stand on it. She proceeded to make a bunch of points that would seem, again, pretty indicative of a negative take on the deal.
She's like, this is an objective analysis, Scott.
Right. And, but it was, I thought it was an interesting thing. We put it in the politics report on the day of PolitiFest. Now, that hearing, though, the council president decided he wanted to delay it. I heard later that there was also a lot of push to just get rid of this. And part of that push was coming from Mayor Todd Gloria himself. Huh. Mm. Now, remember that the job would change in two ways. One, we have a city attorney right now who does two big jobs. One is that she prosecutes misdemeanors within the city of San Diego and Poway.
Yeah, sorry.
And Poway. Yeah,
just whatever. Just throw that in
asterisk.
There.
And Poway.
And Poway.
Yeah. And the other job she has is to provide advice to the corporation known as the city of San Diego, right? The mayor, the city council, all the departments, and to make sure that they know what to do. And also, if they need to sue somebody or if they get sued, either be their lawyer or get them one.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The new initiative that somebody proposed, Gil Cabrera, who ran against her a few years ago for the city attorney's job, put forward was to switch it so that there's a municipal council hired by the city council to do that work of representing and providing advice to the city.
The city council's lawyer.
The city council would hire this person, notably not the mayor, just the city council.
Yep. Good point.
Then they would still elect a city attorney to do the misdemeanor prosecutions, which if you think about it would be a dumb job. Can you imagine like your job?
I don't know.
Like,
maybe someone's
you're
going
to run for office and you get to
prosecute misdemeanors.
Like public urination and like DUIs and stuff like that. Like
you're like the baby district attorney.
Yeah, it would. I don't think it would be fun.
And Poway, do not forget Poway.
Yeah, that's true. All the code violations in Poway. Yeah. I also heard one of the things I said when I said, well, you could still be able to do X was the firearms, the gun restraint orders. No, that's a civil function. That would go to the municipal council still. So,
oh, really? That's off the table.
Yeah, so even like the only
traffic
like,
ticket. You're the traffic ticket czar.
Yeah, you get to and the camping ban, right? Like if it gets up. So yeah, there's some things. So I can imagine some guys running for that office, some ladies, whatever, running, saying like all these expansive things they would do with that power.
Sure.
But it also is like, come on, guys, just give it to the district attorney. Let her, she's going to already do all these misdemeanors
Seems
everywhere
very
else.
Very weird.
Just that, do it.
Yeah.
So I asked the mayor's office, I was like, can you confirm that the mayor is against this? And anything about the pressure that he might be putting on it for this to get thrown out.
Yeah.
A few hours go by and they're like, when do you need this? It's like, well, you know, now I'm really late.
Classic journalists.
I need this in like 2 hours.
And they're like, they sent me finally back a response. They said, yeah, it's confirmed.
The mayor is.
I was like, well, wait, just that it's confirmed? Nothing like it. That's it. That's just that it's confirmed.
Okay, and so, remind me the mayor's point. The mayor wants to keep it all as one big bundle. He wants an elected city attorney who handles misdemeanor tickets and who advises the city council.
Right. Now, remember, the mayor and the guy who put this forward, Gil Cabrera, they're buds. Gil Cabrera ran, you know, part of his independent campaign or runs a lot of his independent campaigns or things that he's allied with. You know, they're very close allies. So this is kind of an interesting like break or just decision for him to make. Say like I'm.
Does this get the mayor juice with Mara Elliott, and does that matter somehow? Or
I think it's about the guy he wants to be city attorney.
Okay,
he's supported Brian Mainshine, assemblyman member. Brian Mainshine is running for that seat against Chief Deputy City Attorney Heather Ferbert, who wrote an op-ed about her own opposition to this.
That's so the job she's going for.
I think the people running for this office.
When you're going for a job, you usually believe it should exist.
Yeah.
And that you'd do it great, probably, right?
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
So there's your update on that. I think this is probably, I think if they would have said maybe the mayor has a role in who this person gets to be.
Oh, you think it could have played out different?
Maybe.
Yeah, he didn't like that the city council would be taking one. I mean, can I just say, I mean, it seems very weird to me that an elected person advises the city council. You know, like it seems like, love the city council, hate the city council. It seems like it would just make so much more sense for them to be able to hire an attorney to advise them. Like to, it just seems like such an administrative task. And like making it political and making them advisory to the city council at the same time. Do many other places do it that way? Because it just doesn't seem like a great setup to me.
Well, I think that's a common sense position to have. It makes sense. What Mara Elliott and others would say. Now, Mara Elliott didn't believe that before.
Exactly.
She believed it should be what you said. Like,
yeah,
just
I mean,
a
do politicians believe anything?
Right. But I think what she would say and others is that now that she's seen this stuff go through, being independently elected has allowed her to say things or oppose things or at least highlight things that that the city needs to deal with that she would have been unable or unwilling to do if she had to be accountable to the city council for her job.
So she's saying she makes their legislation tighter.
That she makes the public interest, she represents the public interest better because she can say like, hey, you shouldn't let this ballot measure to sell the stadium land to SDSU go forward because it improperly constrains you as politicians. And they can say, well, I don't care what you say, but at least she highlighted that is what she would say. And, you know, aren't you glad that you had that chance to evaluate it? And they would say, well, maybe you could just help us do this thing we want to do.
Well, what? So then the difference if she was like hired by the city council would be like she feels obligated to give them the decision or the advice that they're seeking?
Yes, that she can.
But wouldn't that mean you're a bad lawyer?
I agree. I agree. You hire a good lawyer and they tell you
this
things
guy,
you don't want to
he
hear
says
sometimes.
Lawyer. Yeah. So good.
That's pretty good. So I think that's it. Yeah. I think that that's what the other side would say is like, well, yeah, you would have four city council members and five city council members on, and if they oppose each other, you know, you could make a decision about like what the politics are. That
free idea for the city here. Wouldn't like a public advocate be a so much cooler role to be an elected role than this city attorney, which plays such a questionable
thing? She actually does recommend that the city auditor be elected because right now it's appointed by the city council and or overseen by the audit committee.
Oh, like, that's a good idea.
Yeah. So stuff like that. Sure. And I think that's part of her point is like, you know, there is a whistleblowing line at the city council, a hotline you can call, but that should go not to the auditor, but to somebody who's truly independent, that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
So I think there's a few good recommendations, but yeah, you've placed your finger perfectly on the issue at hand.
Is anyone ever truly independent?
I love it when we get philosophical.
So it's kind of crazy that Mayor Todd Gloria had not attracted an opponent.
Very weird.
Yeah.
For some time until Larry Turner showed up.
Enter Larry Turner.
He is an active police officer with the city of San Diego, worked with the mayor's staff. You know, like, hey, guys, we should do this. What do you think? Hey, any advice on running for office? And then they're like, yeah, here, you should do it. And then, oh, that office? Oh. That's what you're doing?
I love that. That's actually like really brilliant.
Yeah, he's like, we're tight.
Yeah. Larry Turner, he doesn't say he's a Republican or a Democrat. He wants bipartisan solutions, all these things. He's obviously very focused on homelessness and the crime issues that the police officers like to talk about. He's running for mayor. Talk about him in a second. You met him the other day. Talk to him. Also, though, Jared Wilson, the head of the Police Officers Association, the Union of Police Officers within the city of San Diego. He is also running for office, but this one is in Poway. He wants to be on the Poway City Council, as one does.
Big stuff happening.
Lots of stuff.
Poway's like really popping up on this podcast.
I know.
You know, there's a big debate in Padres Twitter, the land of people talking about the Padres, about whether the Poway is East County or not.
Ooh, that actually is a great philosophical question.
What is the general?
I think the majority opinion is that it is East County. Okay. But there's some that
it's like fancy East County. It's like it's like what La Jolla is to San Diego, Poway is to East County, maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
Right?
There you go. Yeah. I think it's East County, but it's right on the edge. Yeah.
Oh, I went there for a rodeo.
Yeah, and it wouldn't be a trend without a third data point, and that is Terry Hoskins. He's a community relations officer, a police officer in the Mid-City District. He's running against Council President Sean Elo Rivera. Now, unlike both Jared Wilson and Larry Turner, Hoskins is retiring, so he won't have to balance the working for the city while also running for its leadership.
Yeah, you know, I didn't really think about that given their type of job, but I had reached out to Terry's campaign manager. I just wanted to like follow up on some stuff. And it took him a while to respond. And when he did, he said, oh, I was waiting for Terry to get off work. He had like a late night shift or something. And I was like, oh, yeah, duh. They work like 12-hour shifts or something.
Yeah, so you have all these like rules. You can't, maybe on your break or whatever, you can call.
You shouldn't be responding to that kind of stuff while you're on the city's dime.
Some jerk journalist like me that would be, it's 4:30.
Can you send me a quick thing for the politics report?
Yeah. Are we paying your salary while you're responding to campaign messages?
Got you. All right, so Terry Hoskins. Let's talk about him for a second. So he's running for that seat in the Mid-City area. This is the district that was created new after redistricting that last round. Marty Emerald held it for a while. Sean, or Georgette Gomez had it briefly. Mm-hmm. Now Sean Elo Rivera has it. He has become city council president. Seems like in the world of city politics, he's only risen. However, he's got to run in his own district. Now this district has encompasses City Heights, but also the neighborhoods of Talmadge, Kensington, and the university, the city
college
area. Right there. So it's a very diverse district. And Hoskins is pretty well known there.
Yeah. I mean, I met him. So as a community relations officer, obviously he's very involved in the community. So he tends to go to a lot of community events, community meetings. He's a part of the captain's advisory group that they have there. It's like a homeless, they address like homeless issues. And everybody knows who he is. You can find on Facebook like pictures of him helping at community cleanups. And so I think a lot of members in the community really like him and know him.
I mean, that being said, dare we say he's a white guy police officer running in a very diverse district?
Yes.
That might slow one up, but I don't know. Maybe not.
It's tough. It's also a district where it's hard to get people to, come out and vote.
Yeah. And there are
challenges.
Pretty involved white people in that district. I think that it'll be interesting to see, because you deal with this debate a lot in Barrio Logan, right? Mm-hmm. Where there's like, there is an antipathy or a concern about police officers, but there's also a demand for more, right? Mm-hmm. There's like this completely juxtaposition of that, social justice concern, and then this like fervent sort of worry about the quality of life, the crime, and the demand for more. And it's probably something he's trying to address as well in City Heights, right?
Yeah. And I mean, it's interesting. I think, as we learn more about Terry, we'll see like what his thoughts are on, some of the most pressing issues in that district.
Obviously, animating a lot of the cops these days is the homeless crisis. And Larry Turner, who's running for mayor, he points to one thing and one thing only when he talks about the homeless crisis, which is that we got to do this Sunbreak Ranch thing. We talked about that on the podcast a couple weeks ago. You went to an event where he spoke, Bill Walton spoke, and it was Was it all about the Sunbreak Ranch thing? Mostly?
Yeah, it was a Sunbreak Ranch pitch meeting that the Mission Beach Town Council hosted. I don't think they were endorsing it. I think they were like hosting this meeting. So it happened where the big roller coaster is.
Yeah.
You know, overlooking the Pacific.
Yeah, you had trouble finding the room, but it's at
Belmont
Park. I did.
I thought it was going to be like a community room, and I was like, oh, this is like in this amusement park. Mm-hmm. Finally, I found it. And yeah, that's all they... Sunbreak Ranch is... Some people, an idea that is clearly like invigorating many, many people. And Larry Turner seems to be making that like the biggest part of his platform by far.
Yeah. So just a reminder, Sunbreak Ranch, this is the idea that there needs to be some very large camp located in a remote area of San Diego where you could concentrate the homeless individuals and provide services for them. A camp where they would be concentrated.
Right. It's like, I don't know how to talk about it. I was avoiding explaining Sunbreak Ranch when it first came up because I'm like a little horrified by this idea of concentrating people in the desert. And yet, like, it seems to have caught on with a whole lot of people.
Yeah. We talked about it on the podcast, but
don't forget the amenities.
Yeah. There would be like 36 amenities. And I think, as I said before, the one thing that these guys get right is that there should be an urgent sort of triage of the crisis right now. We should treat it like
a humanitarian crisis.
Yeah, there's a humanitarian crisis, some sort of, you know, typhoon came or mm-hmm. a tsunami or a refugee crisis or whatever has occurred. We need to do the kind of triage as a community that might happen if that were to happen. Now, locating it at the one site that they talked about, Miramar, is
why has it always got to be the desert? Like because, all their spots are the desert.
Because they don't want to see it.
Yeah.
And that's where it crosses the line. Because the hard part with any idea like this would be compelling people to go there. And people want to be around community, and they want to be around jobs, and they want to be around the same reason we all live in cities. They want to be there. And if you say like they have to be out in the desert away from people's sight, what is going to keep them there? And that's where the scary part begins, because the only way they would stay there is if you keep them there. So it literally would be
jail or desert. That's what they said. At the pitch meeting, Larry Turner there, you know, they're like, people are asking, how does this work? How does it work? And it's like jail or desert. And they weren't saying it that way. Of course, they kept saying our homeless brothers and sisters options stuff. But like, that is what it comes down to in its essence, jail or desert. Now, those are your options.
Yeah. And Turner would say, well, they can leave anytime, but there's... Again,
they're like going to provide a shuttle into town or something, because it's like, I mean, the Miramar site's like on the 5 or the 805.
Yeah. And we talked last week or 2 weeks ago about the military's own concern about it. Anyway.
Yeah, it sounded terrible. Why someone thought of putting an airport there stresses me out. Yeah.
Well, they want to get rid of the Marines. There's no question. There's been a long push, I think, that land is way too valuable to be reserved still for a Marine Corps air station. Uh-huh. The Marine Corps is like, San Diego's rad. We like having it there. Maybe just deal. Yeah. Now, Turner himself, he's a Marine as well. So he described to me, he said, I became a police officer and wanted to be a police officer because I thought it looked fun. And he takes as many overtime opportunities as he can get. He doesn't necessarily need it. He said, as a career, he just he thinks it's a great service. So whether he makes any waves or not, I'm not sure that he has the kind of institutional crowd and funding to really make a difference in a citywide race. It takes a lot of money just to viably participate in a citywide race. However, somebody like that has a way of making waves and making framing discussions and can force the mayor to make different decisions or whatever.
The union can help you make waves if you've got the police union on your side.
Which brings up Jared Wilson, the leader of the Police Officers Association. They got really involved in trying to sink the candidacy of Monica Montgomery Stepp, running for county board. Supervisor. Mm-hmm. She got through that, but they do have some firepower politically, and we'll see if they use it for their brothers here.
So can we talk about all three of them now?
Sure.
I mean, something is happening, you know, as you said, the cops are running, and sure, at its most fundamental level, that is the facts of the matter. But I think this all points to some like greater unresolved tension mm-hmm. post 2020, you know, in 2020, the world was shook up in so many ways. Obviously, the pandemic, the death of George Floyd, massive protests against police across the country. I think police didn't know. Police felt attacked and like they didn't know what they were supposed to do. And now all that has eased off and like society presumably should have a discussion about what we want from police and like where does this tension get resolved and how does it get resolved? And I don't know if the police have provided an answer to the question yet, but they clearly want political power so they can be involved in answering that question.
Like they want to be a part of that conversation.
Exactly.
As opposed to like, oh, it's happening to us and they're deciding our fate.
Yes. I mean, since 2020, there's been all this talk of crime increased. Since then, it's gone down. But I think they feel the wind at their back a little bit.
Absolutely.
I think they feel more public support.
I think there's a lesson in previous examples of unions getting involved in politics. I remember Lorena Gonzalez and others who were running local labor unions started to realize that they no longer wanted to have people in office who were allies, that they wanted their own people in office. And
right.
You started to see people who were actually members or leaders of the unions running for these seats. And they were openly clear that that was what they wanted to see, that they didn't want to try to get people who might vote with them every once in a
right.
while. Why? They wanted to put people in office.
Cut out the middleman.
Who could really articulate and lead in the way that they think. And I think there's something similar going on here. Stop trying to convince people to be your ally and just run your people. And I wouldn't doubt if several of them, if they had some meetings and others and said like, hey, what do you need to get involved to run for office? And some of them did. Now, maybe it's just a coincidence that they're all standing up now, but I think there's something like that going on.
Totally. And that aspect of these three police officers running is what deeply interests me. I'm not sure the San Diego City Council race or the San Diego mayor race, I'm not sure either of them are going to get a massive world-shaking amount of votes, but like where we settle as a society on the role of police couldn't possibly be more important.
Yeah. Well, I will say this will be a very interesting referendum on the camping ban, especially the race for that city council seat. So Shawnee Lo Rivera was one of four votes against the camping ban.
Yep.
And they'll probably highlight that intensely. And it'll be very interesting to see how it resonates within that mid-city district. Is that something that they agree like he shouldn't have supported? Or will the constituents agree more with the police officer who says like, hey, we should have more enforcement. We should have more quality of life, you know, sort of measures like that.
Yeah. I mean, just from the homeless advisory group that I've gone to, obviously the people that come to this group are people who like come to this meeting because they're going to talk about homeless related issues. So, you know, keep that in mind. But, you know, they're constantly saying like, what can we do as a community to help you guys do your job? Like, it sounds like your hands are tied all the time. Like, how can we help? You know, and it's always the response is always like, well, you got to talk to your elected officials and they're making our job harder. And so I think like it's fair to say that there's likely a good amount of people who live within that district who, you know, do feel a certain way about Shawnee Lo Rivera not supporting the camping ban.
Yeah,
I would say that's fair to say.
All right, we talked about this a few weeks ago. This was the Barlow-Logan community plan and another issue with police officers. Police officers had sort of harassed or encountered these youths at the Chicano Park. And the fallout from that exchange and interaction became a very tense moment at the Barlow-Logan community planning group. Mm-hmm. And an officer was asked to leave. Yes. And then we were waiting to see what would happen, and we saw.
Yeah. In the days after that Barlow-Logan Planning Group meeting, which again, planning groups, they're city affiliated. They serve in an advisory role. They don't really have any sort of power, but, you know, they are representatives of the community and, you know, they weigh in on things. And sometimes if a developer has some sort of plan, they try to accommodate the community.
Yeah, so they don't have power, but they
but
do.
But they do, right? They,
if they're you have voices. A project and they're pretty hostile to different points of that, you do usually try to make them happy because yeah. you don't want them opposing.
You don't want to be a bad right. neighbor. You don't want to have issues with the community.
They got a little juice.
They do. So in the day after that meeting, when the community relations officer was asked to leave, in that moment, some of the board members didn't agree with the chair's decision to ask him to leave. And that unfolded several days after over emails where they were all sort of debating, like, maybe the place where we meet at, which is currently the Chicano Park Museum and Cultural Center, maybe that's not the best place for us to meet. Clearly, you know, there's a group there who doesn't support police and they, you know, don't want police there. And we think we should have police officers at our meetings. We don't think we should shun anybody from our meetings as a city affiliated group. So maybe we should consider moving. And then it was just like a back and forth over email of, you know, some people saying like, well, that's really insensitive to the community. What happened to these teens wouldn't have happened to teens in La Jolla. Uh-huh. And so the police officers need to like think about how they police our community and how they police our youth. So they were having this like very open argument.
That transferred over email.
Yeah, said. It
like
transferred
an
over email.
Email chain blew
yeah.
up.
Yeah, which is really healthy.
Yeah.
Always goes well.
Always very well, yeah.
Well, but it's cool to see, you know, when, yeah. when you get to read the receipts.
Yeah, sure.
probably not to the people who are writing them. Eventually, the group's chair, Julie Corrales, she decided, look, I'm the chair. The community has spoken. They don't want police officers here as long as I am chair. That police officer will not return wow. to these meetings. And so three of the board members did not agree with that decision and they resigned last week.
How many are left?
So that's a tricky question. Some have officially resigned. I think some are considering not being a part of the group anymore. But officially, three have resigned. And four remained. Now, they did have their wow. elections yesterday, but it was funny because there was only like three voting members at the meeting, so they couldn't actually vote on anything. They didn't have a quorum. But, you know, they had elections yesterday, so they'll bring in new members. But yeah, it's turned into a big thing. And from now on, police officers will not be welcome to that meeting.
Is Julie still the chair?
Yeah, she's still the chair. Yeah.
It is. I mean, is that like a flame out of a local planning group?
I mean, I guess. I mean, one other thing, which I don't completely understand, and so I'll do more reporting, but I believe the city's planning department's going through a process right now with community planning groups where the organizations that want to be the city recognized planning group for a specific neighborhood have to apply for that job. And it sounded like the Barrio Logan planning group has not filled out their application. So in theory, like any group could say like, you know, we're going to be the representatives for Barrio Logan. We're going to fill out this application with the city. And now they're going to be the planning group.
Right.
So like all this it's conflict happening. Going on might not matter if they're no longer the voice of the community, you know, when it comes to like city zoning issues.
And again, at the heart of it is this tension. Do you want more police involvement, more police and community relations, or not?
Yeah.
Know? And that's going to be an interesting conversation in a lot of neighborhoods.
Yeah.
I mean, like, we can't even agree to sit on this board together anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That it's gotten so intense.
And it was so intense because I think there are some board members who, you know, are supportive of the police and disagreed with the way in which, you know, the meeting unfolded and the chair asking the police officer to leave because he was there as a representative. And, you know, but then there was other people who were just like, if we silence one group, say SDPD coming to our meetings, then like, that's a dangerous game to play where you're just saying like, you can kick out whoever you want from your meetings. And that's not okay either.
Right.
So even just like, without thinking of like, should police be in our communities and how do they police, just like, the fact that they're a place where people should come and talk should be a safe place for anyone to come and talk.
Yeah. Well, you can keep up with Andreas Chisme at VOSD.org/Chisme. We're going to take a quick break. Stay with us.
Are you passionate about resolving conflicts and making positive impact in the world? Then USD's Conflict Management and Resolution Master's program may be for you. Learn to address conflicts at all levels, from personal disputes to global crises. Join the Kroc School's dedicated community fostering peace and understanding while you acquire practical skills to navigate diverse settings. Apply now and be the change you want to see in the world. Visit sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD. That's sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD. Join culture creator Ramel Wallace, museum CEO Micah Parzan, philanthropist Erwin Jacobs, and urban agriculturist Diane Moss on Season 2 of Stop and Talk, a podcast about the future of the San Diego region. How can we create a vibrant region that celebrates our cultural richness and economic strength? Find out and hear other San Diego experts on Stop and Talk. Discover Seasons 1 and 2 now at stopandtalkpodcast.com. That's stopandtalkpodcast.com.
We broke some news the other day at PolitiFest when Liam Dillon, our alumni, Voice of San Diego's former investigative reporter, is now investigative reporter at the LA Times, covers housing. He sat down with the Attorney General, Rob Bonta, for a conversation about housing, and he asked him about Coronado. Coronado, a couple years ago, passed a plan for how it would comply with the state's housing requirements, right? Every city, every region is supposed to build X number of homes, and Coronado presented its plan of how many homes it would build, and it just didn't comply. And they're like, come at us. And the state apparently has been talking to them about this. Liam Dillon asked Rob Bonta about it, and here's what Rob Bonta said.
Coronado has failed to comply as well. We have been engaged with them. We have been speaking with them. We are in the final stages of a resolution which will bring them into compliance. And so we have a term sheet. It needs to be voted on. We're hopeful and optimistic that it will get final approval by the council. It has not yet, and that can happen as early, I believe, as next week or the week after. So
that happened. This week, Coronado did pass a new housing plan, housing element, as it's called. It identifies 10 sites where the city has pledged to zone for higher density. And it also says, and KBBS's Andrew Bowen was kind of poking at this, making fun of it, that 200 ADUs, you know, granny flats, would be built, and that would help accommodate that. And within that claim is that all of these smaller homes that are in Coronado that are called carriage houses there, that are next to bigger homes, that those right now don't have kitchens, so can't be considered actual separate units. And the housing element assumes that 80% of them within the next 6 years will convert over to full units by adding a kitchen.
That's how the number that they have to, that they're bringing in, that they voted on, is about 1,000, right? They they created new zoning that would allow for 1,000 new units. And so you're saying that they're going to get 80% of those 1,000 by converting these carriage houses?
That 80% of homeowners who have those houses would convert them.
I see.
And so I'm not sure exactly how many that represents, but that's, I think, about up to 200 of the ADUs that they need to get built.
That's some wishful math.
Well, I think they were considering them credits, right? So it's like, we already have this amount of carriage houses, and if they're converted into something, then you can count that towards our goal. And then they were also counting Navy housing towards their goal, which isn't typically done by the state, but for some reason they worked it out or something.
Yeah, they're making a deal. Now, Richard Bailey was at PolitiFest as well. We had a separate panel about this tension. This isn't the only city in California that's dealing with this tension between the state's demand for more housing and demand that cities figure out where that new housing can be, and the cities that don't want housing are very clear about that, like Coronado, like Encinitas and other places. And here was Mayor Richard Bailey from Coronado and his discussion about how sort of unrealistic this is. And he referenced, you know, those towers that are on Coronado that are just kind of out of place in the sense those condos that are up against the water.
Yes.
He referenced those and said, you know, it's a little bit unfair that we can't count those or whatever towards the how many housing units we have.
We said they're like $2 million condos.
So if those towers did not exist today and the city of Coronado were to include them in our housing element, that would actually count towards our 4 million score. The problem with that is that the cheapest condo you can find in those towers is about $2.5 million. And so that's where, once again, you know, the city can try our best to set zoning, even high density zoning, like those towers, but the market effects probably won't achieve the desired result.
Okay, here's what he's saying there, and I think it's really interesting. He's saying these towers that exist on Coronado, even if we were to allow them to be built, like if, let's say, they didn't exist and we said to comply with these rules, we'll let them be built.
Okay.
You wouldn't get anything good out of them because they're so expensive. Like, you all want cheaper housing for people. Like, if you build these, it's not going to be cheaper housing. It's just going to be really expensive.
So he says building's not good on Coronado because it'll always be expensive?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a common thing that comes up in this discussion. They say, like, look, you're going to build this. You're going to allow us to build housing in Del Mar or Encinitas or whatever.
It's going to be high end.
It's going to be expensive. Part of what I always want to say to that is, yes, that's part of the problem, is that if you don't build, rich people are going to build or are going to have homes. You can bet on it. Rich people will find a place to live. When you ban camping on the streets, you ban it in that famous phrase, for both the rich and the poor.
Yeah.
But the poor are the ones that are camping on the streets, right? The rich are always going to find a place to live. If you don't build homes for them, they will find a place.
They'll take the poor people sometimes.
They will take if you don't let them live in Encinitas, if you don't build a place for them there, they will find a place in Carmel Valley. And the people who used to be able to afford Carmel Valley will go to University City. And then University City, they'll go to North Park. And then North Park, they'll take those spots. And then they'll go to South Crest or Spring Valley. And it'll go all the way down until you've literally pushed somebody into homelessness. That's how that works. And it's very easy for them to say, this doesn't solve our housing problem,
yeah,
because it doesn't create a cheap home. Correct. But it may prevent somebody else's more affordable home from being, you know,
picked up by a rich person.
Exactly.
Yes.
Ratcheted up the ladder.
A domino effect. You're laying out like a real domino effect.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so people don't like that, but it is a unified housing market, right? It's not just trickle down stuff. Like, it really does connect.
The thing is, when somebody like Richard Bailey, who wants to be able to control the building in his city and maybe limit that building to preserve neighborhood character, you know, he's just coming at it from the YIMBY side anyway. He's like, well, y'all want affordable housing and this isn't even affordable housing. I feel like it's a little bit like just looking for any argument. Absolutely. To knock down the thing you don't like.
100%. Mm. And I think that, so Richard Bailey is probably one of the most eloquent conservatives in town, right?
Sure.
He wants to be the conservative thinker and leader in San Diego. But I think conservatism, at least the way I understand it, is all about free market, right? Like,
right,
like letting the free market go. But here's a case where the government is literally stopping people from using their land, their own property,
to build.
And he's a conservative leader who wants that to continue.
Yeah. The only thing above the free market is neighborhood character.
Right, okay. Right. Like, more important than the free market is my ability to control what you do with your property. And I think it's a really interesting quandary. And I've had good conversations with him about that. Like, he'll
he's an interesting person to talk to about it and have good faith conversations.
Yeah. So, but I think that's an interesting thing. Now, just on this point about the carriage units and all of these housing element plans in every city are like filled with just ridiculous suggestions about where housing.
Did you look up carriage houses?
No.
They're kind of cute.
Oh, are they?
Yeah. Except one, I was super confused. It looked like the bed was on a porch, and I was like, this can't be real.
It is
San
Diego.
But I guess it was a laying out bed and, you know, oh, on nice. The sun. I was like,
that's
oh,
where
that's
Tom
beautiful.
Cruise crashes after he's, you know, yes. where Maverick crashes after he's, you know, flown and gotten drunk.
But like, no kitchen? What do you do?
The San Diego of our dreams.
Yeah.
Not so, that I use my kitchen.
I looked up an old Andy Keats piece of what the city of San Diego said would happen. And remember, they promised that all these different lots would be upzoned, would have more units. He pointed out that newly built grocery store was being identified as a place where there would be more housing. Like, it was literally a brand new grocery store, and the city's like, hey, that's where housing's going to be. It's like, eh, probably not.
This
was
in Coronado or somewhere?
No, this is in the city of San Diego.
Oh, wow. They did their plan. where the brand new grocery store is.
This was
sweet.
My favorite. He said that the plan for the city's to meet its goal of what it promises it can do for housing was the Copley Price YMCA in City Heights, that there would be a ton of homes there.
What?
Yeah.
These plans seem like they get pretty silly.
Yeah, and the city, when they responded...
silly politics.
When the city responded to Keats, they're like, well, we don't assume all of them are going to become homes. We have a buffer of about 60,000, so if 60,000 aren't, then it works out. But
which
again,
is funny. It makes it just seem like Coronado is like, we're refusing to even put something on paper for you.
Right.
Because you could really put something on paper that's not realistic at all.
And that's what this proves. That all they had to do, they didn't want to play the game even. They didn't even want their citizens
to
have to.
Which I kind of respect that. Yeah. You don't want to play this dumb game. That part I like a little better.
If they just said it that way.
Yeah, exactly.
This is stupid.
But I think that's part of it's such a controversial game. Even just saying you'll let 1,000 homes in, through these like fantastical means, that was just enough of a controversy they didn't want to deal. Or they had a principle that this is a stupid game we don't want to play. I bet it's the former.
Yeah.
A good little kicker on this, I read about the meeting yesterday. Apparently, like, all the citizens of Coronado showed up and said, don't you dare approve this. Yeah. You know, this is terrible. All the city council members were like, we hate this, but we have to vote for it. And I guess that's because Rob Bonta was on them a little bit.
Yeah. One of the council members was like, yeah, I guess you guys could vote us out, but like, this, we don't have a choice. Like, we have to do this.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
was like all of their messaging.
And again, he probably could have just said, like, they're not going to do anything.
Yeah.
We're not going to build homes here. Just Bailey also had a little thing this week. He said he was done.
No more office. No more political office.
Local.
Local.
Local office. You
might
right.
jump right up to the old POTUS.
You got
to
read it closely.
The little words that matter.
He's going straight to national, baby. Like,
I got you. Reminder, we now have all of the content from PolitiFest up on the site. You can check that out at politifest.org. That's PolitiFest.org. Thanks for listening to the Voice of San Diego podcast, the most popular public affairs podcast that covers the public affairs that you value in this particular conversational way. It's the most popular public affairs podcast like that in San Diego. Don't forget that you can catch all of our panels and discussions from PolitiFest at politifest.org. You can also find our reporting from the event and transcripts there. I'm Scott Lewis, CEO and Editor-in-Chief at Voice of San Diego. Andrea Lopez Villafana is our managing editor. Will Huntsbury did a great job. He's our senior investigative reporter. And Nate John organized all that content from PolitiFest and has done a wonderful job as the producer of this show. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.